Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Kathy with a C.
And I'm Kathy with a K.
And this is Killer Destinations. Today's destination is Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas City is the largest city in Missouri, and the area was founded in the 1830s. In 1831, a group of Mormons from New York State, led by Joseph Smith, settled in the area. They built the first school within what would later become Kansas City, but they were violently forced out in 1833. The area straddles the border between Missouri and Kansas at the confluence of the Kansas and Missouri rivers and became a transportation hub. It was instrumental in westward expansion of the United States. Many Native American tribes populated the area in its early days, and the city is still infused with its Native American roots. In the 21st century, the Kansas City area has undergone extensive redevelopment, with more than $6 billion in improvements to the downtown area on the Missouri side. The Kansas City Power and Light District is a dining, shopping, office, and entertainment district downtown that gets flooded by visitors. The city also has haunted houses, historical bus tours, numerous museums, and the Vail Mansion built in 1881, which includes 31 rooms and 9 marble fireplaces. And just minutes away is Longview Lake, a popular destination for fun getaways with family and friends. But it was at this location on a quiet Tuesday morning in 2012 that one young woman met a lonely and unexpected end.
Bethany Laidline was born in San Antonio, Texas, and raised in Arlington, Texas, with a brother and 3 sisters. She was someone who just loved life. She was happy, she was inquisitive, she liked to read, she liked to be outside with nature, and Christianity was very important to both Bethany's family and Bethany herself. Bethany's mom homeschooled all 5 of the kids, which, God bless mom.
Mm-hmm.
In 2005, she actually started attending Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. It was a Methodist private university and the oldest institute of higher learning in the state of Texas.
I know, it's so funny because I had not heard of Southwestern University
Right. Before
we started doing research for this, and I read the same fact. I'm like, oh, interesting.
A lot of Methodists went through Texas.
Okay.
And started all sorts of higher education places. places. Clearly, I didn't go to one of them. Bethany excelled academically, and she met a group of friends who she thought she would be friends with for life. And so, Kathy, what was different about this group of friends is that they shared her Christian beliefs. And they believed in the healing power of prayer, and they met weekly to pray together. With Bethany and her friends, this was a group of about, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 of them initially, but eventually their prayer group increased to include 2 to 3 dozen people. It also increased the frequency with which they were meeting. And Kath, I believe that Bethany met this group of girls her freshman year, but I'm not positive on that.
I agree with you, but they also had guys in the group. Like, it was a co-ed group.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In this group was a guy named Tyler, and he sort of became this de facto leader of the group. He was described as extremely charismatic, enthusiastic about God, and was a big proponent of healing prayers and, you know, generally became the leader. The amount of times the word charismatic was attached to him when I was doing research for this was like dozens and dozens of times. That was the number one way that people described Tyler.
And this wasn't involved in a church, correct? Like, this was
correct.
Their group who was doing, they kind of found each other and they were doing this.
Exactly. And they started calling each other the community. You know, they were part of the community.
4 years after arriving at Southwestern, Bethany graduated with a bachelor's degree in English and a minor in Spanish, and she graduated magna cum laude.
She was no slacker.
She was no slacker. Because Bethany had met most of these people her freshman year, most of them graduated together in 2009. And so at that point, they left Texas and they moved to Kansas City, Missouri. And they moved there because there was a church located in Kansas City that started in, I believe, the late 80s, early 90s.
I think it was like 1999.
They really espoused the same beliefs that Bethany and her group did. The healing power of prayer, the large community aspect of it all. And so that's where they went. It was actually called the International House of Prayer, or IHOP.
Exactly. Not to be confused with the pancakes.
Because that's where you would find us.
Right, exactly. However, what was interesting, Kath, is that IHOP actually sued IHOP. They sued the House of Prayer. And
the pancakes sued the church.
Exactly. Okay. The pancakes sued the church. And they said, hey, look, we have that name, you know, you can't use it, yada, yada, yada.
We don't want people getting
property.
Mistake. Yeah, this exactly. Mistake. Well, maybe they could have had a pancake breakfast and raised a lot of money.
Exactly. In the lawsuit, which was eventually settled, IHOP, the House of Prayer, agreed to go by IHOP KC, IHOP Kansas City. So that's where Bethany and I want to say like 20 of their friends from their little community went as well. And the church was a mission-based church. It was evangelical Christians, and they did what churches often do. You know, they fed the poor, they did their ministries, they prayed for people. But ultimately, it was focused on mission. These 20 youngsters from Southwestern University found this to be a very comfortable place to be.
It was kind of a calling.
Yes, definitely.
When they got there, they all lived in an apartment building and they had roommates, obviously, in the apartments, but it was separated by sex. So girls lived with girls, boys lived with boys. And they essentially lived, though, as a group. They ate all their meals together. They prayed together.
Right.
And still, you know, so as Kathy was saying, they joined this church community, but they kind of became a community within that community.
Yeah, they were sort
they
of
were
like,
very isolated almost.
They were like cliquish.
Yeah, that's what
like,
I mean. Like
they had their clique.
They were fine being unto themselves.
Right.
They didn't need another group.
Right. And one of the things that attracted these young students to IHOP was the fact that they had prayer and worship 24/7. You know, they had a center that you can go to. I don't know if they called it a church or a center, but a place you can go to any time of day where there would be singing, there would be prayer. And so they felt very, very attracted to that lifestyle. When they went to IHOP and became members of
IHOP KC.
Exactly. When they went to IHOP KC, Tyler was still the de facto leader of their little clique.
After they had been in Kansas City at IHOP KC, or sometimes referred to as IHOP U, meaning yeah. IHOP University.
Because they did have a university component to
exactly.
it. And I'm putting university in quotes because I don't know if it was like accredited or simply their brand of education.
About a year after they got there, Bethany realized that she was attracted to Tyler. He was charismatic. He was passionate about the mission and what they were doing. And so she admitted her feelings to Tyler, and he said he felt the same exact way. So pretty soon, the two began dating. The following year, in August of 2011, Bethany actually enrolled in an accelerated nursing program, not at IHOP U.
I have a feeling they didn't have a Bachelor of Science in Nursing at
I'm
IHOP U.
I'm guessing they didn't either. But because it was an accelerated program, she was actually able to get her Bachelor of Science in Nursing in 1 year.
That's pretty studly.
Just after Bethany got her degree in nursing, so 2 years after they started dating, Bethany and Tyler got married and headed off to Costa Rica for a honeymoon. Bethany really just believed that they were two peas in a pod, and working together, their goal was to serve overseas as missionaries.
And that's something that they had talked about for a very, very long time. Like, that was what she really, really wanted to do with her life.
But in the meantime, before Tyler and Bethany were able to pursue their dream of serving overseas, Bethany worked at the Menorah Medical Center and was working with cardiology patients.
On the morning of October 30th, 2012, Bethany left for work at the hospital at her usual time. Nothing seemed amiss, nothing seemed out of the ordinary, but at 11:40 in the morning, police were dispatched to the parking lot of Longview Lake. When they got there, they found a white female slumped in the back seat, and her body was cold. She had a plastic trash bag over her head, and they noticed that there were two bottles of, I believe it was Tylenol PM, and one was completely empty. The police also noticed that the trash bag that was over Bethany's face had been inhaled into her mouth. So it was sucked into her mouth, essentially. And they also noticed that the bag was tied around her neck fairly loosely. The strings of the bag were used to keep the bag in place around her neck. There was no extra ligature of any kind. On the floorboard was Bethany's ID from Menorah Medical Center. They also found a small notepad on the center console, and on it was written, "My name is Bethany Deaton. I chose this evil thing. I did it because I wouldn't be a real person, and what is the point of living if it is too late for this? I wish I had chosen differently a long time ago. I knew it all and refused to listen. Maybe Jesus will still save me." Bethany Deaton was only 27 years old and had been married less than 3 months. The Jackson County coroner ruled Bethany's death a suicide, and detectives contacted her husband, Tyler, who was completely shocked. He then tried calling her parents in Texas, but he couldn't get a hold of them. So he was able to get a hold of friends of theirs, and Mr. and Mrs. Laidline's friends were the ones who had to tell them that their daughter had died. And of course, Kath, as you can imagine, the parents were totally devastated. And when they heard it was suicide, they were like, what?
Couldn't believe it.
Yeah, this is totally out of character. We didn't know anything was wrong. How can this be? November 6, 2012, this is a week after Bethany's death, a service was held at a funeral home overlooking Longview Lake. Bethany's parents flew in from Texas, and Tyler and about 100 other church members were present. Obviously, her close-knit community was there, the
her
little clique. Exactly. So Tyler spoke of his wife, and he praised her goodness, and their tight-knit group was completely distraught. But according to an article in the Houston Chronicle, IHOP church leaders were disturbed by some of the things the community members were saying about Tyler's group at this memorial. So the next day, the church leadership goes and they say, we want to have a meeting with all y'all. So Tyler and all y'all who live so close in community and you have this sort of like subgroup, we want to interview you. We want to talk to you. And in that meeting, many of the church members talked about how controlling Tyler was. And they talked about some of the things they did in community. Ultimately, the church leaders told Tyler, you are no longer welcome on church property. You are no longer welcome at IHOP University. And that shocked many of his friends.
Well, I'm sure it shocked him as well.
Yeah.
Did you get the feeling that it was the church leaders who felt threatened by his charisma?
No, I didn't get that feeling. My vibe, and it wasn't fully revealed. There's a couple things that we can get into later, but it wasn't completely revealed all the things they shared. But my vibe on it was that, wow, you guys have been a subgroup of our church.
Operating outside the rules.
Yeah, you're kind of creating some of your own rules. And this is not what we stand for. This is not what we believe. So bye-bye, Tyler. 3 days after that memorial, the Laidline family had their own funeral in Texas, and that was at their own church, Grace Community Church, and Bethany's body was flown back for it. So her family, her friends, her neighbors gathered, and they were completely astounded that Bethany had killed herself. She had always been described as vibrant, happy, and she was darling, and she had these crystal blue eyes. She was a very cute girl, but she was always just like upbeat and happy, and nobody could reconcile the suicide with the girl they knew, even though she had been living in Georgetown during her university years, and then she spent the few years in Missouri before her death. So there was distance and time.
Through a lot of growing years.
Correct. Then Bethany's parents received a phone call from the Jackson County Sheriff's Office, and they asked her not to bury Bethany's body. They wanted a second medical exam. They had new information, and they were bothered by some things. The first was that Bethany died with her eyes open, and detectives knew that most of the time, if you committed suicide by use of a pill designed to be a sleeping pill, you literally fell asleep and died peacefully in your sleep. They were very bothered that her eyes were open at the time of her death. Also, there were unfinished thank you notes in her car from the wedding, which detectives thought was odd, and so did Mrs. Laidline. And Mrs. Laidline found out that the empty bottles were Tylenol PM, and she was like, why would a nurse not get prescription medication? Why would you use over-the-counter when you had access to better stuff? So the Laidlines agreed that they would allow their daughter's body to be examined a second time.
So on the morning of Bethany's funeral, what happened is two church leaders from IHOP KC went into the police station with a friend of Bethany's and Tyler's. His name was Micah, and he was part of this clique that we talk about, the subgroup within the group. When they told police why they were there, they called in Detective Penny Cole with the Jackson County Sheriff's Office. Micah told Detective Cole that he and the other men had been dosing Bethany with a drug called Seroquel, which is an antipsychotic, and they would sexually assault her. And this had been happening for the past few months.
And I just want to clarify, after Bethany and Tyler got married, Bethany moved in with Tyler, but she was still in a community that was dominated by men. So every article I read said she lived with other male members of the community. So I don't know if they had moved into a house, or I don't know if they were still in the apartment complex, but Bethany was no longer with the women. She was with the men and she was with Tyler.
A sheep among wolves.
Yes, exactly.
So one of the side effects of Seroquel is extreme drowsiness. And it turned out that Tyler, along with all of these other guys, was sexually assaulting his wife. Micah became concerned that Bethany would tell her therapist what was going on, and so he felt that he needed to stop her. And he actually had a prescription for Seroquel, so he was the one who dosed her.
And he also said that she had Seroquel in a water bottle on the morning that she died.
Micah admitted that he was the one who placed the bag over Bethany's head and held it in place until her body began to shake. Micah also told Detective Cole that Tyler told him to do it. And Tyler told Micah, I know you have it in you. According to a probable cause affidavit for Micah, Detective Cole interviewed a female IHOP KC pastor. The pastor told Detective Cole that Micah had admitted to the sexual assault of Bethany, and they were actually recorded on an iPad that was back at their place. He said there were also poems that had been written about the sexual assaults. I don't know by whom, and really don't want to.
So the same day that Micah went in, detectives brought in four of Tyler and Bethany's roommates, and they were all interviewed. They were all given Miranda warnings. You know, we all see them on TV, the right to remain silent. And they all waived their rights and agreed to talk to detectives. Each admitted to having sexual experiences, but not with Bethany. They were with Tyler. They told detectives that Tyler said he was trying to discover his masculinity and he was using the sexual experiences with them for intimacy, not for sexuality. One of the roommates who did not participate in the sexual activities with Tyler said that he felt groomed. And he said that within Tyler's community, there was sort of a sub-community that engaged in sexual activity with Tyler, and it was only men.
So it was a subgroup within the subgroup?
Exactly. Okay. A group within a group within a group. Yes.
There you go.
So these four men that were interviewed by detectives did not discuss sexual assault. There was no admissions of sexual assault of Bethany by any of them. They only talked about their personal experience with Tyler. And basically the vibe was that Tyler was using religion and closeness and intimacy as an excuse to unleash his true sexual feelings. And so the detectives interviewing him could not believe how manipulative he was, because these other young men were so easily swayed to engage in sexual activity that theoretically they would not otherwise have been predisposed to doing.
It was almost like a cult within a group within a group.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because in everything I read, Tyler was called a cult leader. I think that's a bit of an overstatement. I don't necessarily support that.
No, I agree. But it has all the markings of becoming one.
So what had been happening actually was Tyler had been issuing dictates and creating rules, punishing people. So the one example that I recall, and this was from a 48 hours interview that I saw, was that one of the female members of the group had started becoming more reclusive. So they took off her door. And if you fell out of favor with Tyler, he would basically give you the cold shoulder. He would ignore you for days on end. He wouldn't talk to you, wouldn't address you. And so he had become very controlling and somewhat tyrannical, but highly manipulative. And nobody said that they were forced to engage in any of these sex activities. It was mostly like petting and laying next to each other, but they had been, I'm going to call them, not brainwashed, that's too dramatic, but easily convinced that it really wasn't sexual. Tyler was also interviewed by detectives, and he admitted to the sexual experiences, and he also admitted that he kept them secret from his wife. So all of his guy friends knew that there was tension between him and Bethany, and they knew that there was tension in their marriage. They knew that Bethany was unhappy and that she was frustrated. And one of the young men that was interviewed by detectives said, 3 days after Bethany died, Tyler told me that he had a dream that he killed his wife by suffocating her. But when Tyler was brought into the police station, he was confused by it. He had no idea what was going on. And he believed that, oh, there must be some type of law that you can be held responsible for another person's suicide. So when he got to the station, again, he was confused but prepared to answer questions. And then he sees Micah in handcuffs, which shocks him. And the detective says, keep these two away from each other, which I am certain was staged.
Oh, absolutely.
Like designed to get him to be like, the jig is up.
Right. Elicit fear and making a deal.
Exactly. So when they confronted Tyler with Micah's accusations or Micah's confession that he had killed Bethany and that Tyler had put him up to doing it, Tyler was like, no, that did not happen. He completely denied everything. And he said it didn't make sense. Micah wouldn't do this. And by the way, he has mental health issues. I had nothing to do with this, all this kind of thing. Again, he told the truth about the sexual experiences. He admitted that Bethany wasn't aware of them and told detectives that he had no reason to believe anything other than that she killed herself because she had been depressed lately. So 4 days after the conversation with detectives, Micah is arrested, but Tyler is not. There is no evidence to hold him. However, Micah has his confession. So in an article in the Corpus Christi Caller-Times, naturally, reporters went out to Micah and Tyler's respective communities where they lived growing up, and they interviewed neighbors, they interviewed students who went to high school with each of them, all that kind of stuff. And everybody was shocked because Micah apparently had a rather gentle disposition and Tyler was just incredibly well-liked and upbeat and happy and all that kind of stuff.
I have no doubt he was the most popular kid in high school.
Yeah, but both of them were very polite, very smart, and generally good people.
After Micah was arrested, he was taken to jail, and a preliminary hearing was scheduled to determine if there was enough evidence to hold him over for trial. So about 3 weeks after Bethany died, Micah's preliminary hearing was held, and he shocked the prosecutor when he recanted his confession that he had killed Bethany. So Kathy, after this happened, you can imagine a shocked district attorney immediately called for a continuance.
We're like, we need time. We need time, Your Honor.
And the prosecutor also mentioned that they were still awaiting the medical examiner's report on Bethany's exact cause of death. I think they were still waiting for toxicology, probably.
Right. And the thing about the preliminary hearing is, as you said, it's to see if there's enough evidence to hold the defendant over for trial.
Day one, killer destination school of law.
And so without the prosecution actually putting on a preliminary hearing, because normally you introduce the autopsy results or whatever, the reporters left the courtroom really disappointed.
I bet.
Yeah.
But they didn't stay disappointed for long. When the judge granted the continuance, the prosecutor said, going forward, they were going to seek an indictment of Micah through the grand jury process rather than taking it to a preliminary hearing.
There's essentially two ways to charge somebody with a crime. A secret grand jury process.
Which is also called peanut butter sandwich time.
Exactly. Or
no, it's ham sandwich. Ham sandwich. It's a hammy sammy time.
Yeah. Or a preliminary hearing. And the bummer about a grand jury is that the universe doesn't get to see the evidence. It's all secret.
Which is only a bummer for the people who want to know, not for the...
Such as myself.
Exactly. Inquiring minds and all that.
Exactly.
After the continuance was granted and they had left the courtroom, Micah's attorney went out to the courthouse steps and spoke to the reporters. According to an article in the Kansas City Star by Glenn Rice, Micah's attorney, Melanie Morgan, made the following statement, and I'm going to read this. Micah told a fictional account that was bizarre, nonsensical, and mostly untrue. They were the figments of a distraught and confused young man under extreme psychological pressures as a result of his friend Bethany's untimely suicide and sudden removal of his spiritual leader, Tyler, from their extremely close-knit religious community.
And Kath, one of the things that the attorney said, and I don't know if it was at this press conference, this impromptu press conference, or whether it was later on, but she accused the church of having an exorcism of Micah, which stressed him out.
And yeah.
And the church was like, we didn't have an exorcism. So,
Attorney Morgan said, in the end, the truth would show that Micah did not commit murder. So Micah was let out on bond, but a month later, he was indicted by the grand jury and sent back to jail to await trial. Now the detectives have an ability to look more into Micah, right? They've got a little bit of time before a trial will happen. They were actually kind of surprised by what they found and started to wonder, did Micah actually have it in him to take somebody else's life? But the exact opposite was true when they started looking into Tyler's background, because they heard over and over again how manipulative he was. Yes, he was charismatic, but he didn't necessarily use that for good rather than evil.
Probably both.
Trial was set to start 2 years after the indictment in November of 2014.
So with trial approaching, it's time for the defense and the prosecution to make their motions. Usually their motions to exclude evidence, motions in limine, whatever you need to do to tighten up the evidence for a jury trial. So the defense knew that the primary evidence against Micah was his confession. And so they did a motion to exclude the confession as being too prejudicial because there was no corroborating evidence to support it. And what the motion said was that Bethany died painlessly with no signs of struggle, her body in a relaxed position with a pillow nearby and her glasses placed in the cup holder. Through the course of discovery, they also learned that Bethany had been admitted to a hospital for mental health concerns just a week before she died. She told Tyler that she was going to kill herself, and the medical records do show that she was having thoughts of suicide. Now, police know that she told Tyler that because Tyler told them. Tyler said she threatened to drink, I think it was antifreeze, something like that. So this is also in the defense motion. Then just 2 weeks before trial was to start, prosecutors quietly announced they were dropping the murder charges against Micah. They were afraid that if they took it to trial, they did not have enough evidence for a conviction. They knew that if he got an acquittal, double jeopardy would kick in, and they could never hold him responsible for Bethany's death in the future. But of course, even though they tried to do this quietly, reporters found was like, what?
Because they were waiting for that trial.
Exactly. And so they had to admit there was none of Micah's DNA on the bag that was over Bethany's head. and the medical examiner found no Seroquel in her system. The handwriting was verified to be Bethany's.
This is on the suicide note.
On the suicide note. And there was nothing to verify Micah's version of events. So I did not read this anywhere, and I tried so hard to find it, but I believe there was nothing on any iPad that substantiated what Micah was saying.
So, like, no recordings of the assaults and no poems?
I don't know if there were any poems, but I don't believe there's any recordings of any assaults. So, with the fact that they had confirmation that Bethany experienced depression and was feeling very badly, they had no choice but to drop the case. Because of many problems with confessions for a number of reasons, prosecutors need corroborating evidence. So Bethany's family was devastated, but they understood the prosecution's position. One of their big themes was that they believed Tyler had defrauded their daughter. It came out that Tyler and Bethany's marriage was never consummated. Tyler was gay and trying very hard to change himself and to suppress it, which obviously didn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Bethany was being punished and shunned
because of his own failures.
When she was trying to be affectionate with him, he basically said she was selfish and don't be narcissistic, that kind of thing.
It's not all about you.
Yeah, that would throw anyone into a depression. Yes. According to KSHB Action News 41, Micah was diagnosed with a reactive psychotic disorder, usually triggered by a stressful or traumatic situation. And remember, he already had a prescription for Seroquel at the time of Bethany's death. And the defense attorney said, the trauma of Bethany's death, the trauma of having Tyler torn out of the community, in addition to the intense interviews and prayers, apparently, that happened with IHOP, this triggered his trauma response, like he had a psychotic episode and lied. That was what the defense attorney said. Ultimately, the lack of intimacy in Bethany's marriage made this newlywed miserable. And the night before she died, Tyler held a meeting with, you know, the rest of their subgroup, shall we say, and he told his community members they needed to make a choice between their own selfishness and the community. Now, when this was reported, it wasn't really stressed what exactly he was talking about, but Tyler later admitted that Bethany had a totally mortified look on her face. And I am sure she was assuming that his comments were directed at her desire to be intimate and have children.
Well, I think she was assuming correctly.
Well, I don't know. Like, you know, the substance wasn't really revealed.
No, but I'm going to assume it was correct, just based on all the little tidbits you've discussed.
You may do so.
Thank you.
And it was the next day that Bethany was found dead. Now, I saw an interview with Tyler on 48 Hours, and he said that he didn't really believe his wife was suicidal. In hindsight, he admitted that he wasn't a good husband, he wasn't empathetic about her feelings, and he was excessively controlling and believed that he was responsible for her poor mental health. One of the things Tyler said was Bethany deserved a straight husband, and she got a gay one. And she never should have experienced that.
It was reported that Micah issued a statement condemning the International House of Prayer for taking him to the police station, among other things, and said, "They threw me to the wolves and walked away, dusting their hands off. Their only basis for the way they handled everything was to defend their own public image, not to defend the innocent." Now, Bethany's father, in a brief interview with 48 Hours, said that knowing what he knows now, he believes Bethany was terribly depressed and not properly helped, and that's what led to her committing suicide. Bethany's mother also made a statement to 48 Hours, and she said, "I just want justice. I just want truth. I want people to know that apart from Bethany's obvious beauty, she was an intelligent and deeply caring person." Bethany's mother also admonished people, "Don't let anyone get between you and your child. Don't let anybody cut you off from your child." The coroner's office has ruled the cause of Bethany's death as undetermined. To date, no one else has been charged.
Thanks for listening.
If you haven't subscribed, please do.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.